The WBFO Brief Podcast is made possible by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Access to the newest treatments and most sophisticated testing is so important. It matters where you receive your cancer care. Spend one day with Roswell Park. Visit roswellpark.org.
Today's WBFO Brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Tesla will be laying off 285 employees from its South Buffalo plant. According to a WARN notice posted on Wednesday, layoffs are expected to begin on July 15th. The move will impact 15% of the more than 2,000 Tesla employees in Buffalo. In a statement, State Senator Sean Ryan said he was, quote, deeply concerned about the move, adding that, quote, New York State should be prepared to impose fines on the company if layoffs of the employees dips below its contractually obligated employment targets. Nearly 1,500 volunteers are expected to remove at least 15 tons of trash this Saturday from 35 sites around western New York. Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper calls it the largest single cleanup in the region's history. Communications Director Jennifer Fee says volunteers will be armed with an app that will provide critical information on the garbage that's collected.
We can use all of that data to push for stronger policies and stronger water protection at a local level, at a state level, at a regional level, and also at a national level. We're hoping that in the years to come, we can work smarter and not harder and put ourselves out of a job cleaning up the waterways.
The Waterkeeper is partnering with more than 15 organizations on the effort. And a boil water order remains in place for customers of the Village of Fredonia water system. Chautauqua County health officials say the water has elevated levels of turbidity and could contain harmful microbes. Classes will resume today for students at Frontier Middle School after a potential gas leak forced an evacuation Wednesday. All students and staff were shifted to Frontier High School after the odor of gas was discovered Wednesday morning. National Fuel determined the potential leak was coming from a ceiling corridor adjacent to the middle school gymnasium. The gas line has since been capped and permanently shut off. Parents were allowed to pick up students during the day. Others were served lunch in the high school and returned home on their regular bus runs. This Saturday's cleanup throughout the region is getting significant support from Buffalo's Common Council. Each council member is contributing some of their discretionary funds for the cleanup and is expected to clear 15 tons of trash. The Ellicott District's Leah Halton Pope says she and her colleagues are pleased to support the volunteer effort organized by Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper.
The reason why we're here today is this earth, this planet is lent to us, and it's our job to take care of it, not just for the current generation, but for future generations.
While 1,500 volunteers are expected for Saturday's cleanup, Waterkeeper officials say more are welcome. The effort will run from 10 until noon. And four regional sites will be receiving historic preservation awards, including Buffalo's iconic Parkside Candy. Others are the Lustern House in Eden, Bent's Opera House in Medina, and a 146-year-old cottage near Silver Lake in Wyoming County.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying griffs find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
On Monday, Governor Kathy Hochul announced that if the budget passes as it stands, all care under the Consumer Directed Personal Assistance Program, or CDPAP, would be moved to a single fiscal intermediary. CDPAP allows people with disabilities to hire and retain personal care aides whose pay and benefits are provided through one of 600 local fiscal intermediaries across the state. WBFO disability reporter Emily Watkins spoke with Brian O'Malley from Consumer Directed Action of New York.
Can you tell me a little bit about the current landscape of FIs in New York State and how this will impact that?
Sure. There are probably currently about 600 FIs across the state, and they range in how they operate and the populations with which they operate, with whom they operate. Some of them are independent living centers who specifically focus on those with physical disabilities, some developmental disabilities. There are developmental disability organizations that largely focus on those populations. There are individual FIs that focus on different cultures or subgroups of the population, dealing with the specific needs and supports that are needed within those cultures, linguistic preferences and the like. And so really the diversity of the agencies allows proper, not just administration, but support of the consumers who are using the services through those agencies, really allowing them to thrive and live the highest quality life possible within the community.
And I know that a lot of these FIs are also led by people with disabilities or employ people with disabilities to administer this program. If they do indeed move to a single FI, how will that impact all the people who are currently employed by FIs to administer this program?
This will be one of the largest job loss events, as far as I'm aware, in the state's history. We would lose about 20,000 jobs as a result of this policy scattered across the state. It would be, you know, New York City to Buffalo, the North Country to the tip of Suffolk County, about 20,000 jobs lost in as this is implemented, minimum.
I mean, from your perspective, are there any better ways that New York State could save money with this program? Is there any aspects of this program that could be changed to solve that desire of saving money while also not hurting consumers?
Sure. We have for a long time actually supported proposal to actually winnow the number of agencies that would decrease the number of agencies based on substantive criteria of how those agencies operate. Are you following the law? Are you truthfully advertising? Are you operating within the guidelines of the program? When you tighten up some of those pieces, you would inherently begin to save some money. When if we were to tighten up some of the pieces around eligibility, without doing eligibility cuts, but just making sure that the people who are in the program are actually able to meet the requirements of the program, are actually able to self-direct their own care, or if they are a designated representative who administer it on behalf of someone else, are actually fulfilling that role. These are pieces that, frankly, the Department of Health has the authority to undertake today, and we would argue that they should. You know, it's important to make sure that people are capable of self-directing or have someone who's capable of self-directing for them in order to make sure that the program works. But the notion that this is, that we need to get to one FI just ignores all of the different roles that the FI fills and will ultimately cause tremendous disruption and harm.
Emily Watkins, WBFO News.
The New York State budget, which is already over 2 weeks late, is likely to be later after the legislature's bill drafting office was the victim of a cyber attack. WBFO Albany correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Hochul and state lawmakers say that the attack occurred at around 12:30 a.m. Wednesday in the offices where bills are written and digitally printed. Hochul, speaking on WNYC's The Brian Lehrer Show, says her top cybersecurity team is on it.
This happened very, very early in the morning, and so we've been on top of this. I have one of the top cybersecurity teams in the entire country. I knew that was a priority, so no one will do it better than we do in trying to get to the bottom of this attack.
The governor says the bill drafting staff are resorting to computers dating from 30 years ago to write the bills the old-fashioned way.
We have to go back to the more antiquated system we had in place from 1994.
The governor says she doesn't know at this point if the cyber attack was politically motivated or who could have initiated it. A spokesperson for the Senate Majority Democrat says staff is working on the budget bills using older technology, and he does not believe this will delay the overall process. Republicans, who are in the minority in the legislature, decried the lack of information about the cyber attack and the lack of transparency about a tentative budget accord that Hochul announced back on Monday night. Senator Tom O'Meara is the ranking member on the Senate Finance Committee.
Here we are in Planet Albany. under a cyber attack and bill drafting with a budget that's 17 days late.
Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort says he was told that the GOP might receive draft pieces of legislation to review instead of the actual bills because of the delays caused by the cyber attack. He says that would be unacceptable. Ort says Republicans, like the rest of the public, are not getting details about what actually went wrong with the bill drafting cybersecurity systems.
I have not had a direct briefing as far as what happened, what's the risk, what was the result of the attack, and again, where are we on the bill drafting piece specifically?
Legislators, both Republicans and Democrats, say despite all the delays, they still hope to get bills printed and voted into law by the weekend. After that, they're scheduled for a two-week vacation. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Police in Ontario say nine suspects face charges in connection with the gold heist last year at Toronto's Pearson International Airport. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, three of the suspects remain at large.
It was the stuff of a Hollywood movie. $20 million in gold bars and more than $2 million in cash. A heist police say was carefully planned and well organized. The money and gold had been shipped to Toronto from Switzerland and then unloaded at an Air Canada cargo facility shortly after the flight landed. Police say a suspect presented fraudulent papers and then loaded his truck and drove off. Brinks Canada arrived at the facility a few hours later. Now, on the anniversary of the theft, police in Peel Region, which includes the airport, say they've solved the case. A duplicate airway bill was used for a legitimate shipment picked up the day before. Within months, they identified 25-year-old Durante King McLean as the driver of the truck. He was stopped by state troopers in Pennsylvania, and in his vehicle, 65 illegal firearms, police say, were likely bound for Canada. He is in custody in the U.S. and faces multiple charges linked to the gold theft. Peel Police Chief Nishan Duraiappah says his arrest and the seizure of the firearms was critical.
Those 65 firearms, definitely not in the hands of somebody, saved lives, without a doubt. So it's not just the theft of cargo. This is a dotted line to people's well-being anywhere in this country, wherever those firearms ended up.
Altogether, nine suspects faced charges, including one Air Canada employee and one former employee. Warrants have been issued for three who have not yet been taken into custody. Peel Detective Sergeant Mike Mavity says some cash has been recovered and a very small portion of the gold.
We believe the gold has been melted down and reconstituted into local and possibly international markets. It can be done, unfortunately, fairly easy, and that's what we're trying to find out.
Mavity believes the proceeds from the sale of the melted gold were used to buy the illegal firearms. The rest might never be found. Meanwhile, Air Canada has confirmed that two of the suspects did work for the airline. It would not comment further, saying the issue is now before the courts. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
A heavy rain, as it often does, arrived at an inconvenient time for a visit to Buffalo's Broadway Fillmore District to see Dan Shanahan at Torn Space Theater. And of course, it was for an outdoor tour.
Dan?
I have umbrellas here too.
Great.
We stepped inside for a moment because there was a lot to discuss with Dan Shanahan, artistic director for Torn Space and professor of entrepreneurship at Damon University. This spring, Torn Space will begin the completion phase of their multi-million dollar construction project on the campus that also holds the historic Adam Mickiewicz Library and Dramatic Circle. While construction of new additions and amenities was at the center of our talk, it quickly expanded into a greater discussion on a city neighborhood, its drastic changes, and how the arts, again, appear at the transformative center of life in Buffalo.
So we're outside here at Torn Space Theater and on the verge of beginning construction phase three of the reconstruction, redevelopment of this property. Describe what it was like when you first got here those many years ago.
So Torn Space has been in residence with the Adam Mickiewicz Library and Dramatic Circle since 2000. So we've seen, over the course of 24 years, the Broadway Fillmore neighborhood change quite a bit through incremental improvements. When we first began in 2000, there was not a lot of development activity happening in the neighborhood. It was a challenge to bring the community into our Broadway Fillmore neighborhood. We were at that point doing a nice job of engaging with the direct community, but we also wanted to broaden the scope of what public we were engaging in and how we were engaging. Then for the last 5 or 6 years after that, it was sort of a plateau.
Okay.
And I would say around 2015 is when we started to see some really exciting development happening. And that was sparked by local individuals, block clubs. It was being done very much on a grassroots level. That was able to get the energy to a certain level, and then the state was able to come in and the city with public funding, and then we started to see an acceleration of development in this area.
All right, we're outside now, and we're on the grounds, and where we're standing right now, which is outside the design studio, which was another addition that you guys built here a few years back, but this, where we're standing right now, isn't going to be like this in a couple of months.
No, we're standing in what is a construction site, and we're sitting between three different buildings. So to the left of us is the Adam Mickiewicz Lyman Dramatic Circle Tavern. This building was built in 1917. Directly attached to it behind us is where our performance theater is located. That building was constructed in the late 1800s. And then to the right of us is the abandoned gas mart that we were able to restore into our design studio. The construction that's going to be happening right here is going to be a glass enclosed vestibule.
Coming off of Fillmore Avenue.
Correct. Yep. Coming off of Fillmore Avenue that will be linking all of these properties together into a cohesive campus. This will give the public a clear focal point of where to enter. And then this vestibule will extend beyond our design studio into the outer grounds that we'll be developing into a interdisciplinary cultural campus.
Designing for site-specific theater is what you do. So what are the resources? I would say that when you came here 20-some years ago, you saw something totally different than what other people saw.
This is an extremely authentic area of our community. It's very much grounded in the residents that live here. In addition, though, there are fantastic assets such as St. Stanislaus Church, the Central Terminal, Broadway Market. And so the infrastructure is here to, in a grassroots way, start to develop this neighborhood. And so what Torrance Space is focused on is how can it be a cultural anchor to this neighborhood and then work in concert with all of the other exciting development that's happening here. So I've been a big champion for this neighborhood. As you mentioned, we've been here for now 24 years. And so it is very exciting to see the development that's happening and to be a part of that.
One other question, because you did mention this earlier on, how it was a challenge early for Torrance Space to get other parts of the community, other parts of the city, Buffalo, West New York, to come to this neighborhood. They come now. And I'm wondering if there are people who have offered perspective about that, that they are maybe perhaps glad that they were drawn over here, and that once they took the step into this neighborhood and came to Torrance Space, that they were maybe somewhere very, very special.
Well, I think they're coming to the realization what the residents of this neighborhood have always known, that it's an incredibly historic neighborhood with lots to offer. And so as new visitors come into the neighborhood, engage with the businesses, the historic aspects of the neighborhood, the Adam Mickiewicz, Torrance Space, I hope what they're coming to an understanding of is that this is a vibrant neighborhood, and neighborhoods become only more vibrant when people engage with them. This idea that certain neighborhoods can be passed over or kind of used as like a sort of a drive-through space is not going to move things forward. So as long as people are engaging with an area and actively participating in it, you start to see a dynamic quality come to fruition.
Our visit to the Torrance Space campus on Fillmore Avenue took place just a few days after Dingus Day. The signs that hundreds of people had been there celebrating remained evident as we walked. A once-forgotten neighborhood is becoming a favored destination. Construction of Phase 3 at Torrance Space will begin soon, and most should be complete by fall. Some work will be finished in 2025. Dan Shanahan calls it historic preservation mixed with contemporary design.
If we can just go to the corner of Fillmore and Paderewski.
I would love to go to the corner of Fillmore and Paderewski.
I know we're huddled under umbrellas.
Oh, that's all right, though.
It's not a long walk.
So
we were talking about incremental improvements.
Right.
And so what we're walking on is newly laid sidewalk. This was a great effort between Torrance Space and council member at the time, Dave Fronczak, to work with the city to relay new sidewalks all along Fillmore, Paderewski, and Wilson.
Right.
Prior, this was almost impassable.
Wow.
And so just these kind of small improvements that started to improve the neighborhood. And then when we get to this corner, what I like to do is have certainly guests for the first time look to the right. And you just get a really terrific view of the central terminal. And at this point, it becomes very apparent how important this corner is to the development of the Broadway Fillmore neighborhood, because the design studio that we've been speaking about is really very much in direct conversation with the Central Terminal and St. Stanislav's, as well as the lots that we're developing. And so I think one can start to really envision how all of these various properties can start to kind of work together to really push the conversation forward with how this neighborhood is going to be further developed, which, again, very much is rooted in grassroots efforts, driven by a quality of design and appreciation for the historic nature of this neighborhood, which has been so important.
All right, Dan, always a pleasure talking.
Jay, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.